Well, Joe Kendrick, blessed are the storytellers. You are one, and you have added a new flavor to your long track record at radio with Southern Songs and Stories. But before we get into that, I've got to ask you about your background. And you're a North Carolina native and have been at WNCW for about over 10 years, it sounds like. And just give us a quick sketch about how you wound up there.
Sure. I was always fascinated with radio from early childhood and went into college at UNC Chapel Hill, got on at the radio station there. Upon graduating in 1991, quickly after that, I started volunteering here at WNCW. Moved out of town for a couple of years, but then came back again in the mid-90s. I had my hand in radio somewhere or another all along the way and volunteered, did a lot of overnights, slowly took on a little bit more and a little bit more. I had a business for about 10 years and still did some radio part-time and sold the business in 2006 and then came on full-time at WNCW as the morning host.
And your position there now, exactly, what's your title officially?
I am the programming director. I think it's phrased as director of programming and operations. As Bruce says at WXPN, chief of a lot of things.
Sure. It's how radio works. For me, WNCW has captured and made the culture of Western North Carolina for so many years. It's just an essential part of the Americana landscape that I know from growing up in North Carolina and frequent visits to the western part of the state and discovering the music there. I mean, it was Merle Fest that really got me deeply into roots music over many years in the 90s. And you're at a radio station that's right there at the nexus of that culture. So I'd love to hear your take on that culture. What is Western North Carolina, what's special about it, and how do you guys at NCW try to reflect that on the air?
This is a bit of a ground zero spot for so much of roots music from the old styles of Appalachian music, which originated from places like the British Isles and sort of merged in the Caribbean with the banjo and then came down the trail, so to speak, into Western North Carolina, upstate South Carolina. And that continues and is alive and vibrant today. It is continuing into the next generations, and it is evolving and growing, I would say. So that's exciting to be right here with all of that tradition right in your backyard.
Yeah, I also get the sense that it's a place where traditional or neo-traditional musicians can reasonably expect to draw an audience from an older demographic to teenagers and college students, that there's a large constituency, a wide constituency for people who will show up, pay to get in to see shows, go to festivals, and be part of that culture, which is pretty much you can't have the culture without the audience.
That's true. And the kinds of music in that old tradition that are updated into the new styles do tend to attract a wide range of ages. And you see that at places like Merle Fest, a lot of the festivals around in this region, you'll have a band like, say, John Stickley Trio, and they'll get people from all ages that come to the show and that are energized and excited by it. And that's a really encouraging thing to see.
Well, John Stickley Trio is one of the bands you've profiled so far in your Still Young podcast, and I'm going to ask about them and why they attracted you in a second. But just what was in your mind and heart when you launched Southern Songs and Stories, and what is it trying to be, or has it found that yet?
It's an ongoing question of it's a searching of who we are and what that means to be from our region of the South, what the music means to the culture, and vice versa. So it's something that you can't ever really answer, at least definitively, in one place. It's always happening. You're always posing that question. But basically what I wanted to do with that documentary series is expose artists. And in this, the way I do it is pick one band or one artist at a time and do a focus, do an episode on them and explore all of their roots and shoots and the people that have influenced them and interview as many people around them as I can, showcase a lot of their music. In this case, I'm doing a lot of podcasts now. I've also done a lot of videos.
Well, I was going to say that it's multimedia. You've got still photography, prose writing, video interviews, video footage, and the audio podcast product. So is everything fit under the Southern Songs and Stories umbrella there?
That's true. And I've worked with various filmmakers, photographers that have gone along with me that I've sort of roped into this endeavor. And we've had little adventures together, and it all goes under that umbrella.
So you seemed initially to get zoomed in on the Albino Skunk Fest as a vehicle, a place to sort of create the ethos and the aesthetic of the show. So talk about why there and what that is.
It was almost by accident that I went to the Albino Skunk Fest, because I had gotten together with a new filmmaking partner named Aaron Morrell. And at the time, early this year, we were meeting and strategizing on something to do. And the Spring Skunk Festival was just far enough away that we could have time enough to get our plan together and go. And I knew that I'd wanted to go. I'd never been there. So just sort of put our finger on the calendar and said, okay, let's do that.
And then tell folks sort of what the vibe and feeling is if they haven't heard and seen your piece yet.
Yes. Skunk, the Albino Skunk Farm, it gets its name from some albino skunk or skunks that at least used to be on the premises. But it is a little spot near Greer, South Carolina, which is very near Greenville, South Carolina, but it's really just out in the country, and it's a little spot which used to be a farm. And it's got all sorts of people that come. It's not too big. It's got one stage. The people are extremely friendly. You all get to hang out with each other, maybe about 1,000 people. And I had friends talking to me for years about this, just with, you know, just being over the top about how much they loved it. And I kind of, you know, pushed them to the side a little bit and said, yeah, I understand. You know, I've done that before. Okay, I understand. But then I went and it really clicked, and it really is a special place.
So you've gone deep on two bands that I can see have threads in musical, sort of musicologically speaking, the Acoustic Syndicate and the John Stickley Trio. So taking Acoustic Syndicate first, I believe that you kind of had a pretty deep interview with them and backgrounder on who they were first. And they've been doing their thing, their progressive thing in out of the area for a lot of years now.
They sure have. And I knew all of the guys in Acoustic Syndicate fairly well. I've seen them play for 20 years, and they were an easy choice to focus on, and wound up having to go to Durham to actually get all five of them together at the same time. But it was a neat little road trip, and had a great time with talking to them after the show. We had a good 45-minute conversation that's all been edited and condensed into the podcast that I did. But those guys are neat, just real salt of the earth, real genuine folks, and they play fantastic
music. And family, right?
Yeah, you've got the brothers and a cousin are the McMurrays. So you've got Steve is the cousin of Brian and Fitz, who are brothers. And then you've got Jay Sanders, the bassist, who's been with them for more than 20 years.
Acoustic Syndicate sort of represents the all of the many offshoots of bluegrass. Bluegrass core, but that sensibility born of listening widely to radio, knowing jazz, knowing and having and the newgrass, the post newgrass revival bands, and they fit right in. But they haven't left their region much. They've not been as nationally prominent as others. And sometimes I wish they hadn't. And hearing your interview sounded like they were, you know, somewhat existential and content with that they really relished their closeness to home, their relationship with their region. Yeah.
They do, and they had that turning point where they were going out on the road and playing hundreds of dates a year, but then family life happened, and they had that choice that a lot of artists come to and say, either I'm going to do this or I'm going to do the other, and they chose to go ahead and start their families and basically take a number of years off, but got pulled back into music at least on the basis where they are now, where they've made another record and they're doing a number of dates a year, but they basically have their other vocations and their home life as the main thing.
And then pivoting to the John Stickley Trio, your most recent episode, tremendous band. Give folks the skinny and but more the importantly, why they belonged in your podcast.
I had met John Stickley years ago. I'd known their music and have seen all of them a number of times, but had worked with John Stickley a little bit on a previous video session that we had done with a band called Teleco. He had produced the latest record from Teleco a couple years ago, and then had always wanted to do something with them. Fascinating trio. It's an acoustic power trio, and their backgrounds are so diverse. That was the neat thing about this episode, was diving into their history and finding out all of their influences and where they came from. And it was a wide variety of styles and where their backgrounds were before they formed the John Stickley Trio. And I think that's a lot of the energy that goes into that sort of that genius of their music.
Do you have a personal love of instrumental music, whether it's on string band instruments or otherwise?
Yes, and I've a little bit like John. He talked about it. We did a video on them, and then I based a lot of the podcast from the same interview that we had done, the video at the Albino Skunk Festival at the Spring Skunk Fest. John talked there about how he came up in Chapel Hill in the mid-90s, and so I had graduated from Chapel Hill just about that time. And so a lot of that music, that indie rock sort of thing, and instrumental bands like Shark Quest were a big influence on John Stickley, and I still love that band to this day.
Well, Joe, do you have any feelings about where this is heading or things that you could help people look forward to? And then we'll sign off by making sure people know how to find the podcast and all of the various media you're producing.
Yes, the next episode I'm working on is on the singer-songwriter named David Childers, and he's here from the Piedmont of Western North Carolina. We call it Metrolina over in Mount Holly. He's on Ramser Records. I sat down with him and Dolph Ramser, had a great conversation, which will be the starting point for that podcast episode, which will come out later in November. I'm also working on another podcast, a history of Green Acres Music Hall, which is a venue from days gone by. I had a run from about 79 till about 99 here in Rutherford County, in a little spot, a little out-of-the-way spot, where people like David Grisman, Newgrass Revival, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, Rodney Crowell, all sorts of names came there into this little spot in the middle of nowhere and played. So I'm delving into that. I already sat down with Bela Fleck and Steve Metcalf, who ran Green Acres, and that was the launching point for that. So I've got a lot more work to do on that, but that'll be after David Childers. And I hope to do a podcast once a month and also continue to do some video work as we're able. And that's all on SouthernSongsAndStories.com.
Sounds great, Joe. Thanks for the work you do, musically and otherwise. And we'll look forward to new episodes and follow along.
Thank you so much.